Good afternoon. The time is 12:07. You're tuned to Midday Matters Outer Spaces here on 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. And this is the time when we explore your outer spaces. And that means a little bit later in the show, Doug Hackbarth will be answering your plant and garden questions. And of course, Doug is in the studio with us today. Doug, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Thanks very much for being with us. And this is the last Thursday of the month as well, and that means Laura Stein from Laura Stein Gardens is with us in the studio as well. We're going to have a kind of a special chat as we do most final Thursdays of the month. Laura, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Sean. It's nice to be here.
Today, we do want to hear from you, of course, so give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. And just a quick note, we will be taking your plant and garden questions specifically a little bit later in the program. But if you'd like to join in this part of the discussion, please go ahead. We're waiting to hear from you. Now, Laura, you sent some photos over, as you often do during this this time. And this show, we're going to be talking about garden rooms. And you can see actually some photos on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/middaymatters. Now, I've seen the photos, but for those listeners who may not be able to get to our Facebook page, what is a garden room?
Well, we're lucky in that if you can't get to the Facebook page, you can take a stroll down to the Follinger Fryman Botanical Gardens. And you'll have to excuse my raspy voice today. I got a little allergies going on.
Something in the air.
Yeah, there's a lovely showcase down in the showcase garden at the Botanical Gardens right downtown, and it's called Soothing Summer Gardens. And it's going through mid-September, but many of our listeners may have seen the great article in the Sunday newspaper this past week. So I was intrigued by that, and I thought, boy, I've got to go see this. And so I got to go with my good friend and fellow designer, Judith Nastali, yesterday, and we went down and got to walk through, and we're always interested in garden design. So there are four rooms with different assorted entryways, and it was just really interesting, all the ways you could set up a garden. They've got a pergola set over one of the walkways, and of course lots of benches and seats, and garden rooms really... when we design an outdoor garden, we're kind of looking at spaces to be in, whether it's an area just to sit outside your outside the home, just to sit in the afternoon. And we create rooms by having certainly having walls of shrubs or trees to give us a little privacy. But you can also have rooms where you can have a fire pit or a little fountain. And this is just, I think the Botanical Gardens really did it well. Rebecca Canales is a good designer, and she always sets up the showcase so nicely. But what it shows, you know, one of the rooms has, it's nice to have color in the garden, and black plants are all the rage. So in one of the rooms,
black plants whether are all the rage.
Yeah, with the black foliage and black petals, and they've got some really gorgeous black cannas that have bright flowers in red and orange. But the actual, you know, on a canna leaf, the leaf is really big. So those are black colors, and then they've got two bright yellow chairs, Adirondack chairs, right in front of it. So it's visually, it's really very interesting.
You're adding that splash of color, I
right.
guess, to and really, you know, this is something you can obviously do at your own home. This is like your garden can be very much a reflection of yourself, your interests, your design ideas.
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons we call them outdoor rooms, because You can bring your indoor tastes out into the garden with furniture and pillows, but also now there's such a large variety of plant color in the foliage and in the flower color as well.
And some of those black plants that you talk about, of course, you said the black cannas, which is really what? Just a really dark
right.
red.
If you're really looking at it, it's maroonish.
And those elephant ear plants. Mm-hmm. Right? They come. They come in
almost, almost purplish.
They're almost black for sure. Yeah. And they get the huge leaves, and they like a shady area. But these Anirondacks that you mentioned, and I always have trouble saying Anirondacks, so I'm proud of myself right there. The ones you mentioned in the here's all this dark colors, and these are a nice yellow color.
Right.
And they look very inviting, and I'm with you. I like to set in those Anirondacks. They're the most comfortable chairs.
They are.
And if you can stare at water.
Mm-hmm. Whether right. That's why you see the Adirondack chairs up around lakes and things,
yes,
right?
Whether it be a fountain or some kind of a waterfall feature. You know, the Holiday Inn, I think, I don't know if it's Holiday Inn. Anyway, the one right down here next to the baseball stadium, the Tin Camp Stadium. If you go there and you go outside into their patio area, mm-hmm. they have three fireplace pits and a lot of comfortable furniture out there. They're not the Anirondacks, but comfortable furniture. That's mm-hmm. another thing, like you mentioned, a fire pit. They have three fire pits, and on a cool night, even in the winter, it's a great place to just go and maybe have a cocktail and sit by the fire.
Sure.
It's fun. So that is a great outdoor space, mm-hmm. too.
And I want to clarify for those listeners who may not have seen a garden room, may not be able to get to our Facebook page to see the photos or even get to the botanical garden soon. We're not talking about that sunroom that you've been thinking about adding to your your home.
That's true.
Forever. I mean, these are outdoor spaces that where you surround yourself with beauty.
Right, and some of the material they used for what you would call a wall out in the garden, they used some tall evergreens, say arborvitae or tall yews, work columnar yews would work too. Certainly blue spruces, Norway spruce, the larger evergreen trees would work as a wall too. They've done something really interesting at the botanical gardens, and they've taken bales of hay or bales of straw, and then they've kind of put like a stucco mud on them so it's got a bit of a Southwest feel, and they've made those walls and then actually built a wooden pergola over the top of that. So this space really does have, it's got walls, and it's got, of course, a floor, places to sit, and then with the pergola across the top. A pergola is like a long arbor that goes over a walkway, if that makes sense. And so you could grow a vine over it. And then so you really are almost enclosed in this space, and so that's what we call a room.
And what a great thought when you mentioned the straw, bales of straw, if someone's going to have a party or something.
Sure. They make great seats, right?
And you don't have enough furniture. Right. What's cheaper than a $4.50 bale of straw that will hold 2 to 4 people
For
$4.50? And when you're finished, you can go plant some grass seeds somewhere and use some of that.
But well, especially in the fall, it usually is sort of adds a nice element with moms, or if it's going to be a party out in the country, or depending on, of course, the theme of the party. But yes,
and fire a big bonfire.
They are very practical.
Something. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I just think it's great. I wanted to say one other thing too about the outdoor garden. Two things to be cautious of. Number one, if you plant a lot of flowers, it looks nice. But remember, at this time of the year, bees become a huge problem. I saw, we have chives that are in full bloom right now. They are just solid bees, solid bees. So keep that in mind, especially if you have children.
Okay, Doug.
They don't come after you, but
right,
they really don't.
No,
if you
they
leave
don't.
Them alone,
no.
They just love those chives and other things. So you might consider two factors: being too close to blooming flowers that will draw the bees, and number two is hanging baskets overhead that constantly drop blossom petals or leaves down.
Mm-hmm.
As far as water, well, of course, you water before the party, and then you're okay.
Hopefully.
But yeah, that was just a couple thoughts I had.
We're talking today, during this first part of the program anyway, about garden rooms with Laura Stein and Doug Hackbarth. A little bit later in the program, we'll take your plant and garden questions. And, of course, we do want to hear from you, 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. Looks like we've got a caller on the line. Let's go to Bruce. Bruce, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Bruce.
Bruce, are you there?
He's got you on.
Looks like we're having some trouble with the line here. Bruce, if you wouldn't mind giving us a call back, we'll try to get that straightened out. In the meantime, let's take a quick break and we'll talk a little more about garden rooms. This is Midday Matters. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Julia Meek, and what's cooking this week on Meet the Music? A smooth batch of music from Ramon Vols and Victor Zapari, one-man banditude with Totally Orange Time Machine, and a big helping of the Martin Brothers Blues Band. That's Thursday night from 7 to 9 here at 89.1 FM, or listen online at nipr.fm, a two-hour serving of homegrown delights here on Meet the Music.
Mitt Romney accepts his party's nomination tonight at the GOP convention. What do delegates think he has to say to win the vote?
He has to say that government is here to protect the innocent.
Extend the olive branch to the libertarian branch of the Republican Party.
How he's going to fix the nation's economy.
Suggestions for Mitt Romney from fellow Republicans later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold & Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Take the guesswork out of your retirement plan. More information at Reinbold & Anderson on NIPR's homepage at www.nipr.fm. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Senior Information Fair featuring 95 exhibits, located at the Allen County Public Library, downtown Fort Wayne, September 6th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Details at seniorfair.info.
Minutes past noon, you're tuned to Midday Matters Outer Spaces on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth, and because it's the last Thursday of the month, Laura Stein from Laura Stein Gardens. During this portion of the program, we're talking a little bit about garden rooms. A little bit later, of course, we'll take your plant and garden questions. If you'd like to get in touch, please do. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, where you can also see some photos that Laura Stein sent over. Or you can always tweet us at middaymatters. Laura.
Doug brought up a really good point about when he talked about bees and other things by your seating area in your garden room. Because the considerations are a little bit different. So in general, when we do want to plant plants in our garden that are good for bees, because the bee population is really struggling now. So we do want to help with that, and chives are a great one, and I know lemon balm is one they can really use. So we do want to help the bee population, but that was a good point about, so maybe we don't put the bee plant right by the seat.
Right.
You know,
right.
And in general, it's true that they're not all that interested in us. So picking an area farther away from the house where you can have lots of bee friendly and butterfly friendly plants is a good idea.
And let's say there's two kinds of bees that are out at this time. And one is the ones that are pollinating or, you know, pollen mm-hmm. gatherers. They're the ones that really won't bother you. But the ones that are annoying is the ones that come after your Pepsi can and the things that you're eating. They're after the sugar and the sweet sure. stuff. They're really not after flowers. And it doesn't matter where you sit. If you have the Pepsi can or the Coke, we'll sponsor them both. That's where you're going to see the ones that are annoying and that will sting you. And they always come out during this time of the season. They're the worst ones. I think these might be the yellow jackets, but they kind of look alike.
It's interesting yeah. that, you know, the sugary things, the apples and the, that's all that's the same thing as the nectar they're looking for in the yeah. flowers. So they'll take it wherever they can get
it.
Right?
And we've all experienced that even if we're not outdoor eaters at Johnny Appleseed and those fall festivals
sure.
with the cider and, like you said, the apples, they are always there. And
This does bring up an interesting design question, though, because, you know, if you're just putting a small garden in the corner, it seems to me like you can make not that you don't have to think as much about what you put in there, because you certainly do, but when you're designing a room like this, you have to take a lot more into consideration because you're going to be in close proximity to these plants. It, mm-hmm. It's going to become a part of your house in a way.
Sure. And these are the things when you're looking at it to start out at design of a room like this. You know, structure is always the first component that you want to look at. We talk about the bones of a garden. So it is, you know, we start with the trees and we start with the shrubs to sort of set our room up. And then we can add, you know, a lot of times we want to use shrubs that are nice and fragrant. Mm-hmm. And for me, a garden really comes alive when I can see insects and butterflies and wildlife. So for me, I do want to position
sure.
those flowers and the same flowers that attract butterflies that we all love yeah. many times attract bees.
Absolutely.
So part of it is learning to live with the natural world. I think I like having those plants at my house, even though I have young kids, because this is it's a good opportunity to show mm-hmm. them how to deal with bees.
So maybe we just need to teach the kids, you know, kids, those bees over on the flowers, they're only interested in the flowers, not you.
And that's, you know, 97% of the bees.
That's right.
So if you don't, you know, if you just lightly move them away, then it's usually just fine. So, part of what we need to do today, too, there's a really big movement out there, is to teach kids how to get them out in nature so mm-hmm. that they can experience it, because so many of the natural spaces are going away. So
right.
it's a good opportunity to teach the kids.
Well, and this is a theme that we explored not so long ago with your fairy garden.
Oh, sure.
Actually,
right.
a great way to get the kids out and get them into the garden and get their hands a little bit dirty. I could see this really as another great family project to get everybody involved in.
Right, definitely. And when you've got that space that's fun to go to outside, whether it's a fire pit or whether you can, you know, when you can gather around as a family, yeah, it's just another really good place to all be together.
We do want to hear from you this afternoon. If you have a question or comment about garden rooms, or if you have a question or comment about your outer spaces, just a little bit later in the program, we'll be taking those questions as well. The number is 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Before we wrap up this segment here, Laura, I want to ask you, do you have a garden room? And if not, what would you put in yours?
I do have a garden room. It's not completely closed off, but we have at the back of our back garden, we have a nice size fire pit. And we had a big maple tree out front that got that died and got knocked over. So we cut it up and placed these big stumps back by the fire pit. And so you can use them as seats, or mostly what we do is we painted the tops of them all different colors for the girls, and they like that. So they're each a different color, and they usually just jump around on them and run around. So we get to sit and enjoy the fire and have dinner, and they get to run all over on the stumps of trees. So it is really a whole nother place. It's another destination place for us to go outside.
Looks like we do have a caller on the line here. Let's get to John on line one. John, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Oh, thank you. Just a quick question. I noticed when I was walking the other day, in an area where a lot of people walk and there's a lot of dogs, there's a bee nest in the ground. And I'm wondering, I know I don't really want to harm the bees, but I'm concerned that somebody might get into it. I know we had a problem with Wells from the zoo actually being killed by them a number of years back, and I was wondering how dangerous they are and what should be done about it.
Now, those would be the yellow jackets, wouldn't they be?
Are they? They're living in the ground?
Yes, yeah. They're living in the ground.
Those are the ones that are bad, and they are bad. I don't.
Well, they can be aggressive.
Yeah,
they're not. And, they're not. From a human perspective, they'll sting you.
Yeah, most exterminators would tell you not to mess with them. Call the exterminator because they will take care of it. And I did have to call an exterminator earlier this year, and they absolutely said they will not kill honeybees. I think everyone should know that they are as protective. You know, you get that name exterminator, and you think, well, they're evil. They kill all the honeybees. They won't kill the honeybees. They will go after the yellow jackets, but not the honeybees. And they came out and said, well, if it's honeybees, we'll call someone else that will come and actually trap them and relocate them. But then when they saw it was yellow jackets, boom, they were gone. Yeah. 24 hours, they were gone.
So honeybees don't nest in the ground?
I didn't think so.
I don't believe they do.
No, I think they might nest in tree branches, a hollow tree. I didn't think they went into the ground.
Okay.
I can definitely be wrong about that because I'm certainly not an exterminator.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right. John, thank you very much.
You're
we just a few moments left in this part of the program here. Laura Stein, at the top of the show, you mentioned the botanical gardens. If people want to check out some garden rooms, how can they find out more?
They can... you can call the Botanical Gardens. I'm sorry I don't have that number, but they also have a website. What I found when I was down there is that this showcase garden is going to be up until mid-September, and then it will change over completely in November. In mid-September, they're going to add a few things, change the flowers to fall colors, so you could even wait and do that. And then the whole showcase will change completely in November. It'll go into the Christmas holiday show.
And the number for the Follinger Fryman Botanical Gardens, it's 260-427-6440. We're going to take a quick break for the news here. When we come back, we'll take your plant and garden questions. So get them ready and get in touch. The number 260-452-1185. If you'd like to call us toll-free, the number is 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. That's also where you can see those photos of the garden rooms. Or send us a tweet @middaymatters. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The final Broadway performance of the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess is September 23rd. So with just a few weeks remaining, we feature interviews with Audra McDonald, who stars as Bess, and David Alan Greer, who plays Sportin' Life. Join us.
Fresh air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo with WBOI News. Republican presidential hopeful Mitt Romney is criticizing Barack Obama for what he calls failures to support military veterans. At the American Legion's National Convention in Indianapolis Wednesday, Romney talked about linking national security to the economy. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Speaking to a crowd of hundreds of military veterans, Romney spent the majority of his speech talking about issues concerning current and former service members, defense spending cuts, a backlog of military disability claims, and slow economic growth. Romney says the biggest concern he hears from veterans is jobs.
They've served their country. They want to get back to work. They need and deserve good jobs. And this president's greatest failure is that he's not delivered those jobs.
Romney focused heavily on what he calls serious problems facing the VA, including potential funding cuts. But the former Massachusetts governor didn't get into specifics when it came to solutions.
I'm going to make reform in that agency a personal priority, and I've already started thinking about things I'd do to make it work better for you.
In a statement, Indiana Democratic Party Chair Dan Parker praised President Obama's record on supporting veterans and criticized Romney and running mate Paul Ryan's budget proposal, saying it would be harmful to veterans and seniors. Romney's appearance also drew a small handful of union protesters outside the convention. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
The Fort Wayne Tin Caps, battling for a playoff spot with West Michigan, opened a 3-game series against the White Caps last night. WBOY's Doug Gruber has the results.
Tuesday night, the Tin Caps rapped out 18 hits in a 7-6 win in Lansing. Last night, they didn't manage a hit until the fifth inning. West Michigan scored first in the second inning on a Tin Caps throwing error. In the fifth inning, Dwanell Jones got the first Tin Cap hit, a single to left field. Kyle Goodell then singled to center, sending Jones to third, but Fort Wayne could not get the run home. West Michigan held the 1-0 lead into the bottom of the ninth inning. The Tin Caps' Travis Jankowski led off the ninth with a single. Only the third Tin Caps hit of the night. Jace Peterson then flew out to right. Yason Asensio hit a potential double play ball to second base, but the relay throw to first sailed into the dugout. Asensio is on second base with two outs. Mike Gallick pinch hit for the Tin Caps and grounded out, giving West Michigan a 1-0 win. The series continues tonight. If the Tin Caps can win the next two against West Michigan, they will be assured of a spot in the postseason playoffs. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber from Parkview Field.
A philanthropic organization set up by the late founder of retail giant Walmart said Wednesday it will make its largest contribution in Indiana to date to support charter and voucher schools. As State Impact Indiana's Kyle Stokes reports, an announcement Wednesday by the Walton Family Foundation shows growing interest in a hotbed for school choice.
The Walton Family Foundation will make what it calls an investment of $3 million to education groups that support charter and voucher schools. The grants will be used to start new charter schools in Indianapolis, but it will also have a statewide impact by supporting advocacy groups with a statewide focus on school choice, such as the Indiana Public Charter Schools Association, School Choice Indiana, and the state's Department of Education. Relatively speaking, $3 million doesn't represent a game-changing amount of money, choice advocates say. Indianapolis education group The Mind Trust has more than $25 million and gives some of it to start charter schools. That said, Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice President Robert Enlow says the announcement is significant because of the statement it makes about the quality of voucher and charter schools in Indiana.
They come alongside groups that have done good work in a state and help. And when they see an environment like Indiana's, they ratchet up, it seems, their investment to support the great work that's been going on.
More Walton Family Foundation dollars in Indiana will likely raise more concerns among advocates for traditional public schools. They say school choice drains vital resources away from traditional public schools and sends them to charter and voucher schools that aren't necessarily better at helping children learn. For State Impact Indiana, I'm Kyle Stokes.
And now back to your host for Outer Space's Midday Matters, Sean Beter.
Good afternoon. It's 12:35. You're tuned to Midday Matters right here on 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Sean Beter. This, of course, is the Thursday edition of our program when we ask you to get in touch with us so we can explore your outer spaces. Laura Stein had to leave. We thank her very much for being with us, as she usually is on the final Thursday of the month. Now it's your turn. Get involved. Get us your plant and garden conundrums, or if you just have a comment to share, please do that as well. The number is 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. And Doug Hackbarth will be with us for the rest of the hour here. And Doug, as we'll start as we usually do with the weather. Actually, relatively pleasant, you know, the last, really few weeks here.
Oh, yeah. And, here we go back into this hot stuff again, back into the upper 80s and tomorrow in the 90s. I think we would welcome some cloudiness on Saturday, Sunday, and a little bit of rain. However, I don't see it coming. The weather report is they keep saying Saturday, Sunday rain. I don't see it. And then some of the reports say, well, it's going to be Saturday night, not Saturday, which, of course, the air show doesn't need rain.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I guess. And so they certainly don't need rain to mess that up. Did you see any sky riding today?
I didn't. I haven't spent a lot of time outside the studios today.
Well, when I went and gassed up the car, there was a guy up there flying, and he wrote the word air show across the sky.
Uh-huh, all right.
It's kind of interesting to see that. Yeah. But I don't know. I just don't see much rain. You know, maybe I'll be wrong and Sunday we'll have it.
Well, of course, the big question mark for Indiana and for much of the Midwest here is what, if any, rain we'll be getting from Hurricane Isaac, which is currently doing a slow churn.
Yeah, it's not even moving.
Yeah, through the Gulf. We had a story on yesterday and early this morning about there's Chris Hurt at Purdue University who's mm-hmm. predicting, you know, some western Indiana farmers could get 6-7 inches of rain, which could create a very bad end to the season.
Just the opposite.
Mushy fields, a higher chance for disease. Absolutely. If there are strong winds with it, could blow crops around.
It's true. But, you know, again, the hurricane is not moving like they thought it would move right on up. It hasn't moved. There's a real good chance that before it moves, it'll poop out. Well, there's a good chance of that.
Well, as we've shown, I mean, as has been shown throughout, the formation of the hurricane, and it's very difficult to predict. So we'll have to wait and see.
And I've seen hurricanes actually go clear up to upper Michigan the Gulf. I've seen effects go that far.
The fallout from the hurricane.
Yeah, I think it's hard to believe that it could come all the way up to Fort Wayne, but I have seen one actually go up as far as upper Michigan. So it can happen, but this one's not moving.
It's just a matter of will it here.
Yeah,
so
I think a lot of these predictions are going to just sort of disappear.
We'll have to wait and see for the time being. But we do want to hear from you this hour. No callers in the hopper right now. You'll get right through. The number with your plant and garden question is 260-452-1185. And if you'd like to call us toll-free, that number, 1-800-471-9264. Now, Doug, we're getting into this this kind of late summer part of the year. Mm-hmm. What do gardeners need to be looking for in their outer spaces right now? What's it time to get going on?
This is the time of year because, you know, we're having foggy mornings. I mean, they said it was foggy this morning. I didn't see it. But foggy mornings means a lot of heavy dew, which really creates a lot of disease problems. So what are you going to do about it? You can't go out and dry it off. So the best...
That'd be a really big towel.
Yeah, wouldn't it? So the best method is to actually either dust on the dry fungicides or spray with fungicides. And if you use a spray, sometimes just a tiny shot of liquid soap in the spray bottle, it makes the spray stick better. It like makes it spread out and makes it finer and it sticks. And it'll do a much more effective job. In fact, it does such a good job that sometimes if you use soap with insecticides, it does too good a job. And then there's a problem where you burn the foliage. But this is not going to happen with the fungicides. But it's important to do it. When you use the dry dust type products, what actually happens is it lays there as a dust. And then when you have that dew in the morning, it's mixing with water, see? And so it actually goes on that way. It's hard sometimes to spray fungicides. Some of these things don't dissolve well in water. And this is why it's important when you mix these things that just before you spray, shake, 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 then spray. And, you know, if you spray very long, stop, shake it again.
Just to mix things up a bit.
To keep it going, because some of these things don't just readily dissolve in water. And so that's the reason for the shaking. It's real important. Other chemicals, you know, they just dissolve instantly and it becomes a liquid and pretty much stays that way for at least 12 hours.
It looks like we've had a bit of advice from one of our listeners here. This is regarding our bees and yellow jackets, wasps issue earlier. Sue says, I've looked into yellow jackets and they are not bees. They are a type of wasp or hornet. So when they sting you, they do not die. They like to swarm around food and make nests in the ground. They're vicious little critters, and she says they would destroy. She would destroy those nests since they don't make honey.
That's right. So. Yeah. See that, and they look like honeybees, but they are technically a wasp. And I don't want to say that they have no value because I don't know. I think everything should have some value of some sorts, but certainly honeybees are very valuable, and yellow jackets, they can kill you.
They're tough little critters, as Sue says. So John may want to evaluate his elimination options or something to keep.
And I'll tell you, when I said before, you should get an exterminator to take care of the problem, they will tell you don't try to do it yourself. So I had this yellow jacket nest early on this year, which the exterminator couldn't believe I had them this early. Anyway, it was in the wall. And I got a can of that wasp and hornet spray, and I sprayed, and I sprayed, and I sprayed. And folks, I mean, I was getting them. But I could literally put the entire can on this. And after an hour or so, they were just as thick as ever. You can't get them. And they have a licensed product that they can use that they just simply apply and leave, and the next day they were gone.
Well, Sue, we appreciate you getting in touch with us today. We always love to hear feedback and input along with your questions and comments here. And we do want to hear from you. Still about 16 minutes left in the program. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We did have a question here. What is the prediction for trees in relation to the drought that we've had? Any idea on what kind of damage trees in our area might sustain?
Yeah, they won't be damaged that much. They're going to have probably early leaf color, definitely early leaf droppage. And the tree will basically try to go dormant fast.
This is if the tree was healthy in the first place.
Yeah. But it probably won't damage the tree. Trees and a lot of plants in nature, they have this thing, if things aren't going right, they simply shed their leaves. Then they have less to take care of. And especially if it's a drought situation where they can't get the moisture up there, they simply shed this stuff. And they just wait till next year and start over again. And generally, it's not a problem.
And I think if Jason Kissel from Acres were here today, he'd say the same thing.
Yeah.
That, we talked about this, I think, a few weeks ago, that they're smarter than, than we give them credit for.
Trees are people, too.
They're built for this. We do have some callers on the line. Let's open up the phones. And, of course, if you want to get in touch, again, the number 260-452-1185. Let's go to Norman. We've got on the line. Norman, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Norman.
Hi there. I'm going to ask you a question about pest control of crickets and grasshoppers. But first, I'd like to make a comment. Doug wondered if there wouldn't be some value, some role played by yellow jackets. And I will say that I have them here, and they're fun to tease if you have a mean streak like me. and they're easy to fool, too. And I leave them in there because I'm hoping that they take after, groundhogs and squirrels that come around the rhubarb patch.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they actually do or not, but I've been starting it. Oh, does it hurt?
Oh, yeah, it burns. It feels like somebody took a lit cigarette and just put it on your skin.
It sounds like we're playing with fire here.
And
Norman.
The more stings you have, it more than doubles. So, you know, I can understand why people have been killed by them.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go on and ask you, I have some, tomatoes, and especially tomatoes. The crickets are going nuts, and the grasshoppers. Is there a best defense against these?
I think that the organic insecticidal dusts, which would be like rotenone.
Okay.
This is a totally organic dust that's safe for vegetables. The other dust that's organic is Dipel, but that's for worms only.
For worms only. Well, Dipel. I have Dipel, and I haven't put it on there.
Well, I don't think it'll have much effect on your crickets, but possibly rotenone for insects, which is totally organic. Then, of course, there's other products like Seven, which is not considered organic, but yet it is. It's like, you know, it's one of those borderline things.
Well, I've used Seven. I have green beans growing, too, and they were fell under a severe attack by these little yellow bugs, and
right.
I think the Seven helped.
But that's really the best defense, and but, you know, it's one thing to go after insects. It's another thing to go after large insects. They're tougher to get, and usually a granule insecticide is necessary. However, you don't want to put granule insecticides around your fruits and vegetables. So that's why you've got to pretty much stick with the dust, and rotenone is the probably the best organic one.
It would seem like a granule would be less... less likely to cling to the vegetable.
Yeah, it won't cling to the vegetable, but it's absorbed through the root system, so it's actually inside the vegetable. So you want to stay away from granules around food.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and then would the rotenone? Well, maybe the Dipel would also repel slugs, would it?
Yeah, probably slugs too, but then there's slugs. Bait or slug insecticides, but again, they're granule, and you might better read that instruction and see if it's actually safe around food.
I don't want to.
It's great for around hostas. That's what it's made for. You know, hostas get slugged so badly.
So rotenone sounds like the answer for me.
I think so. It's a little hard to find, and if you can't find it, look me up.
Okay. Thank you, Doug.
All right.
You're welcome.
Norman, thank you very much for your call. Have a very good day. About 10 minutes left in the program here. A number of callers to get to yet. I did want to add, Kit tweeted us. Kit says, yellow jackets eat other pests in your garden, like grubs and caterpillars. And she also tweeted us a few links about the benefits as well as control.
See, I knew there would be benefits. That's why I never made that comment. They're worthless. I did not make that comment. And which one is it that they use for arthritis, where they take the bee and hold it on your knee and let it sting you, and it's like a cure for arthritis?
This may be a school of medicine I'm not familiar
they're
with.
They're testing it, and I can't remember now if it is the yellow jacket or if it's the honeybee that they do that with. I think it's the yellow jacket. So there's an arthritis cure.
I hadn't
check
heard a thing
out.
About this.
Check that out. Arthritis and bees. Put that in your computer.
I did want to point out, if you're not following Midday Matters on Twitter, please do. You'll see our retweets of Kit's comments. And of course, if you have a question or comment, you can always tweet us at Midday Matters. Number of callers on the line. Let's keep going here with Laura. Laura, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question regarding, I have a red raspberry patch that's getting pretty old, and it's become quite weedy, and it's dying out a little bit, and I'd like to redo it and rejuvenate it. And I was wondering, we were thinking about digging up the healthy plants that we have and then just maybe rototilling that spot.
Yes.
And replanting those back in there and then mulching it real good. And I was wondering if there was any, when I should do that in September, or and also if there's any other things I could do to help that rejuvenate.
Yes, September would be a great month to do it, and I like your idea. I've suggested that before with perennial beds. Sometimes it's just easier to dig up all the perennials, set them aside, and then really go in there and get rid of the weeds, which is what you're saying, and then put the plants back. When you have those raspberries dug up or before you dig them up, you want to go through that patch. It might be easier after you dig them to like lay them on their sides and trim off all the old canes and only leave the youngest, newest canes on there, because those are the ones that will produce the fruit next year. And a person should constantly, every year, go through and cut out the oldest canes. And you can always tell they look totally different. The young ones are softer and smoother and green, and the old ones are woodier looking. And you want to eliminate those yearly in order to produce, to keep the crop from getting too large and produce your best berries. You'll get bigger berries, maybe not as many, but bigger berries, and it's much better to do it that way. So, yeah, I would say September would be a good month, anytime in September right up to October.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, Laura, thank you very much for your call. Looks like we've got, who do we have on the line next here? Doug, it's looks like it's Irene. Irene, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, Irene. You'll need to turn your radio down, Irene.
Hello.
Irene, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi. If you wouldn't mind turning your radio down and then your question, please.
Okay.
We can hear you in the background there.
Yeah, and it's on delay.
Okay.
There
can
we
you
go.
Hear me?
Yes, now we're doing well.
Yes. I just have a comment regarding the slugs that the last caller was discussing on hostas. I have found, and I don't know why this seems to work, but I've found that saving the shells from the hard-boiled eggs that I peel and just crushing them all up, putting them around my hosta beds in the spring before I do any mulching or anything seems to help.
That's a great idea because they won't like the coarseness of the shell.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, they don't like to crawl around in that coarse shell. And also, that's a great source for calcium in your garden. So it's a double effect. I like that plan.
So would that help other plants besides hostas?
It would for slugs and crawly worms type things. There's a product called, and this is not really a chemical, it's called diatomaceous earth, which is basically similar to what you're saying. And they have, I think it's crushed up glass, like pop bottle glass, mixed in with the soil. And it's so fine that it won't hurt you, but it hurts the slugs and the worms. And diatomaceous earth is simply top dressed around your plants, and it keeps them away, too. It's an organic method of keeping the insects. I like your idea of the eggshells, though.
Well, it saves a lot of waste, and it's not
Absolutely.
That hard, you know, just to save them and keep them. The other question I had, Doug, is regarding blue spruce trees, which seem to have been attacked. I have several blue spruce trees, and many of them are affected by the fungus that seems to be going around. But I'm confused as to why, in such a dry season, I always associated fungal disease with too much moisture.
Mm-hmm.
How could the trees be in such a mess with such a dry summer?
It wouldn't make much sense unless the person was watering. Some people have sprinkling systems that water plants that really shouldn't be watered. And this is some people, but not maybe in your case. So, no, it doesn't make as much sense. But, you know, once the dew comes out, whether it's a drought or not, that dew can create a fungal condition to start forming. And generally, right after the peak of summer, you start getting the dew. When your feet get wet walking to the car across the grass, it's fungus season. And it'll show up first on some plants like roses before it shows up on trees.
So even though you have a terribly hot, dry summer like we've had, is it best not to water things like hemlocks and spruce trees?
Generally, we don't water them if they're in the ground because they can really tolerate. They're like cactus, you know. They can tolerate a long period of drought.
Uh-huh.
If the stems or the branches are starting to droop, well, then it's almost too late. But definitely you would need to water at that point if it gets to that point.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's hard to water these things if they're planted like on a slight mound or a hill.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to get the water down, or you almost have to drill some pretty deep holes and pump that water into those holes to get it moistened enough. Otherwise, it just runs right off.
That point is well taken because all of the trees that are severely affected are planted on kind of slope areas.
Yes. Uh-huh. Get an oscillating sprinkler, set it to the point where it doesn't oscillate. It just points in one direction. Mm-hmm. Point it right towards the base of the tree. Turn it on very slowly, mm-hmm. and you can get a slow soak that way, or use a soaker hose. Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Irene, thanks very much for the call. Have a very good day. Just a few moments left in the program here. We have one more caller to get to. We'll get there in just a moment. We did have a comment from Molly a bit earlier regarding 7. Molly says the 7 product is for killing grasshoppers. It's extremely toxic to honeybees, so be very careful with it if you're going to use it.
That's
so,
right.
Molly, thank you very much for your comments. Also, Kit tweeted us once more and confirms your the therapy you were talking about a few moments ago. It says it's called apitherapy, I believe, or apitherapy. Hope I got it right, one of those pronunciations. So thank you very much for your input here, Kit. We have one more caller on the line. Let's go to Daniel. Good afternoon, Daniel. You're on Midday Matters.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I've got a volunteer seedling, a young tree that I'd like to keep. It's come up, of course, where I don't want it,
mm-hmm.
and I want to transplant it. It's probably 2.5 feet tall, and my question is, when's the best time to transplant a tree, and maybe some advice on keeping it alive when I get it moved?
All right. The worst time, we'll start with the worst time. That's when it's hot, sunny, and dry,
okay.
which could be this weekend. The
yeah.
best time is when it's cloudy, gloomy, and rainy, and okay. that could be this weekend.
All right.
But it is supposed to be in the upper 80s today and in the 90s tomorrow, so this is definitely a bad 2 days.
Yeah.
And I think by Monday, I think it's 88 Monday, but then by Tuesday, boom, it drops back down to about 82. But again, it's going to be sunny. So
okay.
you might wait a couple weeks.
Okay.
Wait until we get it. Just when it's really lousy outside, cold and damp and misty,
yeah.
perfect time to move the plant.
Would you recommend any fertilizer or whatever to matter?
No. You know, I'm afraid of fertilizer with transplants. People fertilize seedlings that they're growing and then they kill them right away because you just don't want to fertilize anything until it's growing healthily or until it's rooted well.
Okay.
Then it's time to fertilize because, as I've
right.
always said, fertilizer is not medicine and it can burn.
All right.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Daniel, thanks very much for your call. We have just a few seconds left in the program here. Doug did get another comment on Facebook here. Sharon is also confirming your the therapy comment that Kit also commented on. Sharon says, just a quick correction on which bees are used for arthritis. It's honeybees, not yellow jackets. We're good friends with an elderly gentleman who used to have beehives and observed him several times letting a bee sting him.
Is honeybees. I knew it was one of them, but I wasn't sure. So yeah,
right. It's a little bit of Health 360 on this Thursday Outer Spaces edition of the program. Thank you very much, Kit, Sharon, everybody who called in. Thanks to Laura Stein and Doug. Thank you very much as well.
My pleasure.
We appreciate you listening as well. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOY Fort Wayne, and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're broadcasting here from the Madge Rothschild Studios. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. That means Fresh Air is up next. Have a great day.